It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Welcome to Argyle Chat, the Plymouth Argyle podcast brought to you by the Herald Sports Desk.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of Argyle Chat. Joining me today to look back on yet another fine win for Argyle is our football editor Chris Errington. Hiya Chris.
Hello Stu.
And a very warm welcome to our special guest Martin Gritton. Hiya Grits.
Hello there.
How are you? You okay?
I'm very good, thanks. Very good. I had a good weekend, and it was nice to see the boys play and win at Oxford.
Yeah, you're doing a bit of work for Radio Devon, is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. I've done a few games this season, so it was nice to get the nod for that one, even though it was quite cold up in the stand. But that was a cracking day, cracking as well.
Yeah, what other games have you seen this season then?
So did the opener of the season at Peterborough, which was a tough game for Argyle, but I mean even then we looked at it and said the side was, you know, if anything, maybe just a bit thin on the squad side, but the 11 that were starting was certainly good enough to compete. So Walsall did the game away at FC Wimbledon, when we won 1-0, and it almost seems to be like a bit of a bookend to the last FC Wimbledon game, because since that point the form's really picked up. And then obviously get Oxford at the weekend, and I've been to a couple of home games as well. Went to watch the Wigan game just with some old pals, and it was a tough old day. That I guess we could tell Wigan were a good side.
Yeah. So away from football, then what else are you up to?
Well, day to day, I work in PR up in London, and basically it's been about 6 years since I finished my career in 2012, and I've kind of tried to work towards the media. As Chris has probably seen and kind of emulate, I'd love to have gone into football journalism, but those guys just have it very tough in terms of the amount of work they do and the amount of people doing it out there now. So there's many ways of getting that, but I like working on the media side of things, particularly on sport if I can. But we do a lot of consumer and lifestyle PR here, which is really good fun, interesting work. And then just bits and bobs to broadcast on the side, but that's more for a hobby than a profession.
Fair point, Chris. Hard work being a football journalist.
I'm glad Grit said that. I'll give him the £5 next time I see him.
As you both say, though, guys, you're at the Oxford game on Saturday, and you know this run's incredible, isn't it, Chris? You know the way Argyle are just victory after victory right now.
You almost have to sort of pinch yourself to you know appreciate what's going on. I mean, I've just written a piece on Monday morning, just looking at where Argyle have come from to where they are now, and you know, Martin mentioned the AFC Wimbledon game, you know, and you know that was only their second win of the season when they won at King's Meadow that day. And looking back to December the 9th, Argyle were bottom of the table. December the 9th, that's not that long ago.
No.
And in that time, from now until then, 33 points from 14 games. And, you know, Martin will tell you that it's an unbelievable record. It's nearly 2.5 points a game they're averaging. And they've gone from bottom to seventh. And I think the good thing is, from my point of view, is that against Shrewsbury the previous Saturday, they played some really nice football. They've played good attacking football again when they beat Wimbledon last Tuesday at 4-2, played some really good stuff. And against Oxford, I think Grits would agree that they weren't at their best. They looked a little bit out of sorts, but they still had that resilience and ability to dig deep, and they got their noses in front. And although it wasn't pretty, Grits, they held on without too many scares, didn't they?
Yeah, very much so. I think that's a really interesting point, is that being able to win ugly. But I mean, the conditions themselves didn't lend themselves to it to be a pretty game. You know, it was one of those cold, sort of the pitch was hard, very bouncy. So it was whoever could get the best of that as quick as they could. And Oxford, I mean, Oxford aren't a bad team at all. They've got a lot of players that can threaten and cause problems, and they did that. But I think just the way that Argyle stuck to their task and were disciplined in both boxes was you know, a credit to them. And like you said, you can win ugly. It generally goes well.
Have you been involved in a run like this, Grits? So obviously, you're a Torquay in one promotion. Did you have anything similar where you went on such a run?
Yeah, do you know what? We had a couple of cracking runs. The best one at Torquay. was when I think we went like 7 or 8 unbeaten, but we did it twice. And Mike Bateson was pulling his hair out because he'd set the bonus schedule up to be an accumulator one. So ended up by the time that we were, I think we were at Oxford away and we went out. We weren't on big bonuses because we were at Torquay, but at the same time, which is quite funny, I think we lost the game and he came in and was celebrating in the dressing room because it meant he could go on holiday that year.
But I mean, you imagine being in the dressing room at the moment, Grits. You know, Argyle, 1-14. You know, 10 wins, 3 draws and a defeat from the last game. I mean, they must almost feel invincible.
Well, it gives you that belief, doesn't it? I mean, interestingly, Chris, I remember when you were up the gantry at the end of the game. I was stood next to the Oxford journalist and the Oxford radio guys, and they were saying, well, look, Plymouth aren't anything remarkable. Plymouth aren't, you know, they're just like us, only they're confident. And it was quite funny because it was almost a little bit dismissive. But that kind of underdog opinion of people, or certainly underestimating that people seem to do it, but that has led them to be able to go on this run. I think that's remarkable from 9th of December to be popping in the league to where they are now. So I think the players within themselves and in the camp will be feeling, you know, like undefeatable, but at the same time, you know, they're there to be underestimated, which means that, fingers crossed, they can push on.
It's interesting you make that point, Gretz, because at Shrewsbury the previous Saturday, everyone I met, Shrewsbury media, the opposition manager, said how well Argyle played, and they were the best team that they'd seen at the New Meadow this season. And that backs up my point, I think, that they've got ability to play good attacking football, but when they had to play ugly and dig deep, they did it on Saturday. Because I would agree, if that was the first time you'd seen Argyle play, you'd think, well, how on earth has that team gone on this fantastic run? But
you can't play well every week, can
you? No, you can't. And you know, it's not a great analogy, but Manchester City don't play well every week, do they? They win every week, but they don't play spectacularly brilliantly. But you know, when you're on a run like this, you've got to dig results out every now and then, and they sure did that on Saturday.
Yeah. Do you think Argyle are now at a stage, though, where people do have to start taking them seriously? I mean, as you say, they're only a point outside the playoffs. They've gone under the radar for so long. They were the sort of big talking point on the goal rush on Channel 5 on Saturday night. So perhaps now people are looking at Argyle and are going to start taking them seriously and perhaps change their formation and tactics to deal with Argyle.
Yeah, well, I think, well, from our perspective, if you look at the way Derek shuffled his pack, though, I think there's a few ways he can play it, and also the emergence of Lemaire is a foil for Carey and also a creative element to the team means that teams can't just go out there and stop Carey, do you know what I mean? And I'm not saying that's what they did, but it did feel that sometimes you could frustrate Graham because you know there's a lot of pressure on him as a creative player and a goal scorer, but because he's a midfielder you can kind of try and nullify him a little bit easier than you could a striker, just because he's got a lot more work to do to get to the goal. It feels like there's a few more options for Argyle and Taylor. Taylor did a brilliant job up there on Saturday, but he's done that before, and his kind of discipline as a striker, I was saying it on the radio, I was thinking he was getting a lot of decisions against him, but he wasn't showing the emotion, he wasn't showing frustration, and I think that's a real sort of maturity about his game that he's kind of developing, because it is a thankless task sometimes, but you know it can't go well for you every game, centre man with no one else around you, but he did a great job Saturday.
I was going to say that it's a role that you can probably identify with yourself. Obviously, you're a striker and play that kind of target man role. How difficult is it to be that lone striker sometimes?
Well, I think it's one of those things where you might only get a few touch points in a game or in a half where you've got to get hold of the ball and you've got to get your team up the pitch and help them out. And I think you can be just judged on those 2 or 3 moments, but they're that vitally important to the team. If you get them right, it can give you the confidence to go on. So, I mean, my scoring record would probably reflect that I was a target man rather than a regular finisher. But at the same time, the kind of your importance to the team can't be understated, because you know you've got a job to do. When you play up as a partnership, it's a little bit different, and you can get you know a little bit more out of the game personally. But it's a tough job, but it's one that Ryan's actually got a lot more strength to his bow than just a target man. You know, he can go the other way, he's quick. And he's a good finisher. So I think the first game I saw him was at home to Exeter. Was it last season? Or was that the season?
It wasn't long after he signed from Oxford. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. And scored a cracking goal then, and another great carry through goal. But it's little moments like that you realise he's got more about him than just being a big man up front.
Yeah, and it goes to show his importance when he was out the team, how much Argyle struggled without him.
I'd say so. I'd say, and you know. Bublicic did a good job when he came in on occasions, but there is a demand in League One and a certain level of, you know, I think just being able to play up front and regularly get 90 minutes in, which is you know, something that Ryan's will obviously get stronger and stronger from now he's back there.
Yeah, that's right. We put a request out for questions from our listeners, and as usual, we got plenty of responses. Mike's asking, how many points will our goal finish on this season? Anyone got a crystal ball?
Well, I did some crude maths before we came in, but thanks, Chris, because the only thing I didn't have was how many points per game Argyle had been on for in the last few games, because it would take, I think, what, the last couple of seasons, it's been 73 points to get you up into the playoffs, and that would take like 2 points a game from Argyle, or just under 2 points a game now, and they're on 2.5 points at the minute. So if they can get anything between 69 and 73 points, I reckon they'll get every chance of sneaking in the playoffs. I mean, that's still a tough order, but the fact that we're even discussing that is a lovely thing.
Yeah, indeed. Certainly different to a couple of months ago when we were doing these podcasts.
We're sat in the room here, and it doesn't seem that long ago. We were sat here and, you know, wondering where the points were coming from. And I think it was 7 points from the first 14 games. I mean, it's just ridiculous. I mean, they're on 50 points, you know, 50 points, 52 maybe secures you League One status. They've got 12 games to go. To my way of thinking, anything else from where they were in October to now, anything else that they achieve now is bonus time. And, you know, there's no reason why they can't carry on. And they've played Blackburn, Wigan, Shrewsbury. They haven't, you know, they lost to Wigan, but they gave Wigan a good game that day. You know, they've proved that they can match any team in this division. They're full of confidence. You know, I'm not going to sit here and predict they're going to make the playoffs, because they're going to have to go some. Like Martin says, two points a game over the rest of the season is going to be a push. But isn't it great to be even speculating about it?
Yeah, another question from Drew. Who has been your star player for Argyle in the last month? Anthony Sarcevic was a player you mentioned recently, Chris.
Yeah, he's come really to the fore since the new year. I think that the whole midfield trio have gelled really well. If you remember, Tumani Diagaraga left at the start of January, went to Fleetwood. And I think there was quite a few concerns, certainly among the fans, and I wouldn't be surprised if even among some of the players, and maybe even Derek Adams, you know, how would Argyle cope without him? And I think the trio of Sarcevic, Ness and Fox have been excellent in this run. I mean, you know, you could go around the whole team and pick out players and say they've played well, but I think the three of them gel really well. They've got different strengths and assets that they bring to the team. Sarcevic's got that driving runs from box to box. Fox is the sort of deep holding player, pick a pass really well. And Jamie Ness, I think he deserves a lot of credit. You know, he's missed a lot of this season with injury. He's come over that. He looks fit and fresh. He covers all over the pitch. He snaps into tackles. He's good on the ball. I think the three of them, I would say, have really given Argyle that platform to be strong defensively. But when they get the ball, they can also turn defence into attack quite quickly.
Yeah. Who stood out for you, Martin?
Yeah, I think that's a great point, Chris. It's you know, Graham Carey's always impressed when I watched him. So, as I said, players that you expect to just play at maybe a high level, but the ones that most important players are those ones, the heartbeat of the team, the kind of the workers. And it's quite ironic, when I went to Macclesfield back in, I think, Paul Ensign in like 2008-09, I think it was, Fox was just leaving Macclesfield, and he was a young, like, winger from Man United. You know, he was a creative player, went to play in the Premier League, and you just, you know, so when he came to Argyle, and I watched him on Saturday, just kind of the calm way that he marshals about, gets stuck in. But as you said, Jamie Ness is a great foil from the Jamie Ness putting a hell of a shift on Saturday. He may not have got, you know, the plaudits in terms of being on the ball a lot, but he broke up an awful lot of play for them. And Sarcevic, again, every time I see him, he's always impressed me. So it's another one of those ones where you underestimate those guys, but it's a great chance for Derek. If nothing else happens this season, it's been a great chance for him to see who can do a job for him in this league and know who be players that he can build the club on for the future.
Yeah, and Chris mentioned Diagaraga there. His move now, obviously we understand the reasons why he left Argyle. He wanted to be closer to his family and what have you. But going to Fleetwood now, that doesn't look like such a good move with Uwe Rosler being sacked.
Yeah, well, these things happen, don't they? It's funny. It's one of those ones where it kind of was a good move for everyone when he kind of, he came, he signed, he did a great job, he did put in a hell of a shift over that Christmas period when you need players that are strong midfielders, like, and he did everything was asked of him, left in good terms, which is brilliant. But that happens in football, and it's one of those ones where, well, look, the guys have got an opportunity to come in and fill the spot, and they've done so. So, you know, credit to him for going and doing that. But to be honest, you know, focusing on Argyle, I'd say that they got a good spell out of him, and you know, and they've managed to kind of get their guys back fit when they need them.
Yeah, that's right. Interesting question from Jack. He's saying, Derek Adams has turned it round. As I said before, he has a good scout, good lad signed, and amazing luck. By default, he had to sign a new goalkeeper, but what a diamond he is. At the same time, Threlko came back with Ryan Taylor, and add to that Lemires, who he was prepared to let go out on loan. Will Lady Luck stay with him? It's a bit more than just luck, though, isn't it?
I'm not sure Derek Adams would agree. It was just completely luck. But, I mean, the points Jack makes, are valid. You know, they had to go out and get a goalkeeper. And you never know what you're going to get with loan signings. You know, some work, some don't work. Remy Matthews has worked. I thought he had a good game on Saturday, Grits. I mean, when there's quite a few crosses come into the box, he just looks so commanding when the ball goes in the box, don't you think? Crosses, punching.
Absolutely, he's so calm. I think I watched his debut at AFC Wimbledon.
Yeah.
I think they'd been played 500 games. He was just, you know, so relaxed, and he gives the guys in front of them a lot of confidence. I think he's a brilliant goalkeeper, and he seems to have a great nature about him, and really supportive for the club. And you know, I follow him on social media, and he comes across well on there, and I think, you know, he's professionally, he's done. I saw him the toughest game I had. I think I saw him at was at the Wigan game at home. Just because when they, you know, they were so clinical to finish, but it shows that it didn't affect him because he bounced back and put some great performances after.
Yeah, the one thing that Jack does say is about Lady Luck. I guess he may be implying to injuries there. You know, the key thing for Argyle could be how they do if they get one or two injuries now, because the team seems so settled.
It's not a huge squad. You know, you wouldn't want too many injuries. But you know. It's one of the cliches of football. We say luck tends to even itself over a season, and there are some times when you think, well, I don't think the luck's going to even itself out this season. But you look at the first part of the season, all the injuries Argyle had, all the red cards they had, you know, there was a lot going against them. And now they've got a settled side, they're scoring goals, they're winning games. You know, I'm a big believer in confidence in football. Once you get some momentum going, you can be really hard to stop.
Yeah, that fair point.
Thank you. We're luck again as well. That's that Gary Player quote, isn't it? The harder I work, the luckier I get. It's
one of
those ones where I think that there's no shortage of hard work going in, and just from Argyle, like, you know, on and off the pitch, I think Derek's got them well drilled. So when this run came together a bit, he wasn't, you know, not as surprised at just the quality and the performances that were put in, because he sees it every day.
Yeah, interesting now though that he's taken them out to Marbella for a couple of days. Is that something I'm sure you would love to have had that when you were a player, Grits?
They didn't do that at Argyle in Grits days, I tell
you.
No, I bet. They did not. We'd have been lucky to go to Butlins for the weekend. But no, Chris filled me in on that. I didn't actually know that was something that he did last year, so
yeah.
it makes sense for the guys to do it again, and you know, I hope it pays off too.
Yeah. I mean, Derek Adams, Sonny Bradley made the point, and I don't doubt this for a minute. They're not going out there for a couple of days just to, get soak up a bit of sunshine. And I'm sure that they'll be working very hard. They did it last season, just after the transfer window. It was a good way of bedding in the new signings before they played a home game against Exeter. And I think it's a good idea if you can do it. You know, they've got 12 games to go. You know, just get everybody on the same page, and then give it a right go and see where it takes them. So I think it's a good thing to do. I mean, they've got a massive game on Saturday against Bradford now. It's 7th Argyle, 8th Bradford. Obviously, you've got to be in the top 6 to get in the playoffs. They're level on points. I mean, I was looking, there's all sorts of stats you can throw out at the moment, but when Argyle played at Bradford in the league on November the 11th, they were 19 points behind Bradford in the table. Bradford were 3rd, Argyle were 24th. And now in the return match, not much more than 3 months later, they're level on points.
Yeah.
I mean, Bradford have had a few wobbles along the way, which has led to them replacing Stuart McCall with Simon Grayson. But Argyle have caught up a 19-point gap on that on Bradford, which is, you know, fantastic. Because Bradford, a big club, big crowds, big players. I mean, to catch that up in a short space of time is incredible.
Yeah. And when you look at the facilities as well, that are at the Marbella Football Centre, so you can see why they want to go there.
You've done a piece for online, haven't you?
Yeah, it's fantastic. You know, it really does look good.
And who was there last week?
Liverpool were there last week, but I mean, you only have to look on the website and see the teams that have been there. You know, you're talking about all the top clubs from England, Germany, France, even Spain. You know, they all go to Marbella for a few days during their winter breaks just to get a bit of sunshine. And
as a player, if you're a player, you're thinking, crikey, this club means business if they're sending us out on a trip like this.
There's definitely that. I think it's always a nice. It's not something that would sway your decision making whether moving or not. But as you say, the impression that it gives to everyone else, even when we went away in pre-season tours with Sturrock, up to Dundee and around Edgewood, you just get to know you get to spend so much more time with your teammates and build those bonds and those strength. You know, the strength of just kind of unity in the dressing room. It's a really nice thing to be able to do when you can do it, but unfortunately, not all clubs are able to. So it's good that Plymouth are creating and providing that opportunity.
Yeah, and they're doing it at a very similar time to last year. You talk about the how big a game it is on Saturday, and of course, the Exeter game last year was such a big game in the campaign as well, wasn't it?
If they could get a result on Saturday, what a springboard that would be! Mm. So it would really set them up for the rest of the season. So there's no midweek game this week. You know, they know their fixtures pretty much from now to the end of the season, and. Go away, have a good time, enjoy themselves, work hard, play hard, and hopefully that will lead to a good result.
Hopefully no craving for a McDonald's as well.
No, absolutely. There was a lot of very funny comments on social media over the weekend, wasn't there, after the Marbella trip was announced. So yes, hopefully no taxis involved.
As I said, we have plenty of questions sent in. Couple here just for you, Grits. Mark Nichols. Have you ever thought about getting into management? And if you have, which one of your previous teams would you like to take charge of?
Management, it never appealed to me. Probably because I moved around so much. I moved around from club to club. And then at the end of my career, I was at Stockport when we had three managers in the space of 3 months. And the club, Didier Mann came in, Jim Gannon, and Ray Mathias. It just kind of soured my kind of outlook on, especially lower league management, because I think... you kind of go into it from a coaching background, and I hadn't done my YT at any kind of professional club, so I kind of came into Plymouth straight from uni, so it never left that an appeal to me. And also just the fact that the limited resources at some of the teams I was at, you're almost hamstrung by what you can do with the players and the team. So if I'd have stayed at a club for 10 years, if I'd have stayed at Torquay and carried on playing there, then you never know, I might have gone into something afterwards, but as you see with some of the ex-pros there, but not for me.
He's too sensible, Stu.
Yeah, that's right.
That's the short answer.
But your degree's in sport though, isn't it?
It was, yeah. I did a degree in sports science, and then I did the PFA, sports writing and broadcasting during my time playing, which was really really good. It kind of set me up for my work now.
Yeah, but using that first degree you got, you never wanted to go into the medical side of sport?
No, do you know what's interesting? The guys there on my course that kind of used it, things move so quickly. I mean, when I went to uni, I think Google had just come out, it was 96. So in terms of the developments online and the online resources and things like biomechanics, diet, nutrition, everything's changed completely. I mean, we used to get, Kevin Hodges used to bring in, we had podiatrists, we had different people coming in and talk about biomechanics just the thinking behind all of that, it's changed so dramatically. And also even the diet. I mean, Paul Maxwell was our physio and was always really kind of clued up on that stuff, and we're always kind of trying to tailor it individually for players, which they do now. So it's interesting that that's something that's key to kind of players' development.
Yeah. Interesting question here. Who is your favourite strike partner and why?
Good question. Well, I think I'll certainly make it about our girl, because I think my first professional striker partner would be Ian Stonebridge, who is a good friend of mine, but also a phenomenal player, athletic, really technical. He always reminds me of this article that I think one of your rival papers, so I wouldn't talk about it too much, but Rick Cowdrey had written an article saying about Stoney. When we first played together, we had a lot of success at first, and he said Stoney was, calm, collected and concise and all technique, and I was as gangly as a newborn foal, I think. We seem to complement each other in the few good games that we had together. I really enjoyed playing up front with him, and then was lucky enough to live with Stoney and Kevin Wells, who was a great player that season that Argyle went up.
Yeah, well, you might have noticed that we didn't have the name of the person who sent that question in, so I'll let you have one guess as to who sent that question in.
Oh, Did Ian Stonebridge send that?
He did indeed, yeah.
So it's a good job you got that answer,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
You know what, that's great.
Moving on then, another one from Jeff. You don't score too many goals for Argyle, or you didn't score too many goals for Argyle, but which was your favourite and why?
My first goal against Walsall, I just kind of, just in terms of the finish, my first real chance at the start, and we got beat. It was a League Cup, but I kind of chucked back onto my left and lifted it over the keeper, just from, you know, it was quite a satisfying goal. And then I suppose that one stands out in the memory. And then obviously my league goal's got two against Brighton on a cracking afternoon, a 3-each. Do you remember that one, Chris?
Yeah, I do. That was a fantastic game, and Brighton were a good side at the time as well.
They're a very good team, weren't they? So yeah, I enjoyed those really stand out, and I suppose I take more away from Argyle than just my goals there, but yeah, it was those two stand out.
Yeah, okay. Bobby, a lot gets said about the banter and spirit in the dressing room. Who were the jokers when you were at Argyle, and what tricks did they get up to?
when I first came in the dressing room, I was doing it during uni, so I was coming in, and there was just loads of crazy old pros there. It was quite funny. We had like Jason Rowbottom, Simon Collins, Ronnie Moje. Those guys would just kind of be up to all sorts of antics, probably some that aren't repeatable on the radio. But Paul McGregor, I'm sure Chris will probably remember being around the place at the time, he was just constantly laughing and joking. I think you can only be that confident and comfortable and that much of a joker when you're as good a player as he was, because I could certainly never get away with some of the...
He had great ability, didn't he, Grits? He was just, I mean, he must have been a character in the dressing room, because he was certainly a character when you spoke to him for press interviews.
Yeah, I think he would just literally sit there and take the mickey out of Martin Barlow's accent most mornings, and then... Just you come back from training and he'd done some stuff with everyone's clothes or like hanging up the worst item of clothing, which was generally either Graham Coughlin or, I don't know, Mickey Heathcote or someone like that. He'd hang up something in the dressing room and just try and wind people up. And he would generally get a reaction, knowing Paul.
Yeah, quite a good guitar player as well, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. He's still involved in music now. I think he was in a band. I used to go and see his band when I could up here. But he's a great guy. Still is.
Question from Dan. Why did you leave Argyle, and why did you join Torquay? Did you have offers to go elsewhere?
I didn't have offers to go elsewhere. I think it was a couple of rumours about me potentially going to Southend. I think when Dave Webb was up there, and I played a reserve game, which you all would come to. But the Torquay one was really, really good. It was out of convenience, if anything, because they were taking a few players from us at the time. There was a good link between the clubs. If anything, Torquay's success is also down to, you know, the fact that... Plymouth were doing so well, so we took those things. About five of us who went there with myself, Jason, Brian McGlinchey. We had just a good line of players coming through from Argyle, and it was just nice still being around. You know, I could live in Plymouth, still kept in touch and live with the Plymouth guys, and you know, I really enjoyed it. It was a good move for me after going from Argyle. It seemed a little bit more of just a different kind of ethos there in terms of how they played. So it was nice to go into that.
It was some team that you had there, that second season. I think you won promotion from League Two, didn't you?
Yeah, it was frightening. And just the ability of those players. I think Roy McFarland had a really good eye for players in the lower leagues that kind of could overachieve. And guys like Alec Russell, Jason Fowler, David Graham, which is unplayable for those years.
He was a fantastic player.
Oh, I know, if Sturridge got him, I think, you know, that could have been... Yeah, I think he would have been a hell of a signing for Plymouth. But I just think there was probably too much... Too much involved in it for Torquay to let him go to Plymouth.
Yeah. You mentioned Paul Sturrock. You know, what was it like playing for him? Because I think you were sort of at the club before he came in, and when he came in, and part of the league title success. I mean, what was you know, playing for him like? Because he had his ways, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. And he took the club by the scruff of the neck. I think, you know, there've been a lot of tough times for Kevin Hodges. Kevin Hodges was a great guy. Still is doing brilliant stuff at the club, but just in terms of the way Sturrock came in and wanted to manage it and just kind of changed everything to his way. And for me, it was very, very tough. I mean, like, I'd gone from... I was still in a bit of a whirlwind coming out and into professional football, so double sessions every day just kind of ground me down in terms of... But what it also did was give me that YTS experience. I didn't do a YTS, which I obviously told, because then I started to get injuries. So by playing, by training, it made me faster, stronger, fitter, and it gave me discipline. So that when I went to Torquay, I knew what I was doing, and I was confident that I could go and be successful. So, you know, I've got a lot to be thankful for, and just being
One final question from Sam Murray. How hard was it juggling your football career with doing a degree?
It's an interesting one, that, because I was coming in on trial during my school holiday, or like uni holidays, and so I kind of got to the point where I think Kevin Hodges would have liked me to sign on in my second year, but I thought it was important to finish my studies, partly because, you know, going in and not being a young guy, I just didn't know how long the football would potentially last, so I'm glad I saw it through. I kind of, you know, feel as though I might have missed a year of development at a club, but I think, you know, I would always advise people to stay and get their studies done and try and, you know, coming away with something was probably more important than starting a football career at that time.
And not for Grits to blow his own trumpet, but for those that don't know, Martin made over 300 league appearances and got 60 goals. So, you know, just because you got your education in, it didn't necessarily, you know, hold you back. I mean, who knows what would have happened if you'd taken another route, Martin, but you must be pretty pleased with the way your career turned out.
Oh, no, absolutely, yeah, and thanks for reminding me, Chris. I certainly wouldn't have wanted to say that myself, but that's nice to hear. No, I think it was one of those ones where I just had, you know, so many great experiences and met so many, you know, different players that it's still nice to kind of get the opportunity to go and talk about it from time to time, but yeah, no, I wouldn't change it for the world.
Yeah, and you retired at quite a young age, really. I mean, I think you said 6 years ago, 33?
Yeah, I mean, it didn't feel like a young age. It kind of... I think one of those things where I kind of went and played for Truro just because Lee Hodges was manager and they were playing at a good standard. But you have to make up your mind. You have to go, right, I'm going to make a go of this career, because at some point I'm going to need to put all my eggs in one basket. And at the time I was kind of flirting with a bit of non-league football. To be honest, I think, I can't remember who the manager was, but I think I said to him when I was in my early 30s, I was like going, no, you know, the game's just changed. The game's just a lot quicker than it used to be. And he said, no, it's not. It's not. You're just a lot slower. So I think when someone says that to you, you're like, well, you know, it's only going to get more frustrating for me in terms of, and I've been lucky not to have any bad injuries. So I got out relatively happy and at the right time, I think.
Yeah, do you miss playing at all?
I do. I miss the absolute, when I go to the matches, like on Saturday, just it stirs the old kind of feelings. And it's amazing how vivid your memories are of your games. I could name every game I played at the Kazam and the results there and kind of just what that game meant to that season for the team I was playing. So it's really interesting that you have kind of this muscle memory of football grounds, and it brings me back to my playing days.
Yeah, fantastic.
One just last question for me, Martin. You know, you've done the commentaries for Radio Devon here. How do you find that? Does that sort of, you know, give you that little bit of involvement again in football that you enjoy?
Yeah, exactly, Chris. I think that's the one thing that kind of keeps my hand in. As you know yourself, I'm always impressed at the ability for those guys to commentate on a game on the radio and keep it kind of the speed at which they have.
It's not easy, is it?
No. It's not easy at all. So sitting there and painting a bit of colour to the game is quite a nice task. All in all, I don't know if I'd fancy the full time having to lead the commentary, but certainly going and being able to add my tuppence worth is good fun.
Yeah, have you got any more Argyle games lined up?
Do you know what? I haven't checked out the fixtures list, but the guys at BBC Devon, I'm more than happy for me to kind of pitch in when I can and help cover for Chris whenever he's not around.
Well, we've got Fleetwood Away in a couple of weeks, Grits, if you fancy that one.
Where's that?
Fleetwood Away.
Do you know what? I think I'm busy that weekend. Okay.
As we say, though, big game on Saturday, Chris, Martin, Bradford. How do you see that one going?
Well, you know, it's a fascinating game, isn't it? You know, there's such high expectations for Bradford. I think it's going to be Simon Grayson's first game as manager.
Is it really?
I think so.
Because he didn't play at the weekend.
So, you know, it's Argyle won up at Valley Parade, so if they could get another win, complete the double over Bradford, that would be some feat in its own right. They're away in Marbella for the week. Hopefully they'll have a good week's preparation and come out of the traps on Saturday and take the game to Bradford. It's going to be fascinating. If Bradford are going to turn around their form, they're going to need to start putting points on the board and get themselves back in the playoff places. So I can't see either team playing for a draw, that's for sure.
No. Final word from you then, Grits. How do you see it going on Saturday?
Yeah, right. Well, do you know what? The one thing that we haven't talked about is just the fans. The away fans are great and voice, but I remember what it was like with the home fans getting behind the team, and it's great to see them flocking to the games at the minute, so I'm sure they can be a big influence for Plymouth if they're going to be taking on and want to beat Bradford, so fingers crossed.
Yeah, I think there'll be probably around 15,000, you'd imagine.
It'd be a big crowd. Yeah, it'd be a big crowd, I'm sure. Yeah,
that's right. Well, that's all we've got time for this week. Thanks ever so much, Grits, for coming on and joining us.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Good to speak to you guys.
Yeah, hope you enjoyed it.
I did.
And Chris, thanks to you too for joining me on the show. Thanks to you out there for listening as well. We'll be back next week with more of the same. Bye-bye.
We are always happy to hear from you, and if you have any questions for our panel, please tweet them to our Twitter account @HeraldPAFC or visit our Facebook page, Plymouth Argyle The Herald. Thanks for listening.